I think of it a little bit like baking a cake with ingredients and such, and it's maybe even not different than our food that we produce today. Yes, we provide the wheat, right? But we don't get all the value out of the loaf of bread, clearly. Today we're getting really no value for that data, and I think that in the future we will be able to, but I don't think it'll be 100%. So by extension, my short answer is no. I don't believe the farmers own the outputs of insight from these farm data platforms.
The Growing the Future podcast is brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. Join us as we talk to top entrepreneurs in the agricultural space about their methods of obtaining success in their endeavors. And now, your host, Dan Eberhardt.
But with no further ado, please welcome to the stage Terry Eberhardt and Warren Bills. Come on, guys. Two tall, good-looking guys, nice guys. Have fun, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
Cool.
All right. Do we have a clicker? We only have some guiding slides. So we're going to freewheel a little bit here because we're actually in uncharted territory somewhat. So there's not a lot of slides on categories that haven't really been deepened yet in our industry. So there's no fireplace behind us, but Terry, I don't know if I really would want to have a chat with you around a fireplace. But I'm going to coin this our tailgate talk.
You look like a young Brad Wall, by the way, Warren.
Let's just pretend we're sitting on the back of a tailgate and having a chat here today. So, beer would be nice. So maybe some gin.
Yeah.
Let's start with some intros. I'm going to start with a story and kind of the inspiration behind the topic. So my career in data started 2 years into my first job out of university selling sprayers for John Deere. And I was managing the Southern Alberta territory, selling these beautiful green machines. Dan was also selling beautiful green machines in Manitoba. And it was the middle of summer, I think it was around the 10th of July, and my phone rang a lot in those weeks. And I answered it, and it was a custom applicator that I'd grown a really great relationship with. And he said, "Warren, I have a problem." I said, "No problem. What's your problem?" I love solving problems. And he said, "Well, I can't spray. What's going on?" "Well, it says that my data capacity is full on my machine." I said, "Okay." So I leased the sprayer for 2 years, and I said, "Well, did you back this up on your Apex program at that time?" I think it was, and no. "Okay. Do you have another data card in the machine?" "No." "Okay. Warren, like, what are my options?" "I gotta go. Like, I gotta spray. I got another 1,000 acres to do today." So talked about it, said, "Well, you know, I can't come help. I'm somewhere else, but can you send someone out and they can, you know, get you back to the office? And I don't got time." So what do you think happened? There's some John Deere guys in the room. You know you can do this. I shouldn't be telling you this. He raced the cart. So he raced the cart. He went in. I helped him, guilty, find the menus on erasing 2 years of data, probably 200,000 acres worth of records, so he could go spray. And that was a little bit of an epiphany moment for me that prompted me to support people in data. And at that time, digital agriculture wasn't really coined as much. But that's kind of taken me through some years of helping farmers and retails and working with Terry and his business, Eberhardt Farms. And so we're going to talk about data monetization today. I'm going to let Terry introduce himself a little bit. Maybe he's got a cool story. And we're going to talk about it in a couple different ways. So Terry, story time.
Yeah, you didn't tell me you were going to start with a story. So I'm not really prepared, but yes, I'm Terry Eberhardt, own and operate Eberhardt Farms and Sure Growth Solutions now for 12 years. So I think this is a really interesting topic and something that I've been thinking about more and more on our farm and with our clients and where the world is going. And data is all around us in a lot of different areas. I don't have an interesting story at the moment, but we're going to get into some interesting discussion very quickly here, I think.
It's going to be good. So, I'm on here, Dan. Just give me a second.
I've got another amazing way to make this work. Yeah, I think. Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, it moved, but it didn't move up there.
Let's figure this out together. So we're frozen. So the idea around the discussion today is to have some interaction. My cell number is going to be on the screen. I've got my phone to answer any questions that you guys have anytime throughout. I won't immediately be looking at my phone the whole time, but I know what it's like. Sometimes you just don't want to ask that question because it might be silly. So there's my phone number in the bottom. It will self-destruct after this show, so... And I put my phone on silent. But we're going to talk about data monetization. And this word is, I don't actually think it's a buzzword. You could argue you're going to see it more and more in the future, but I don't think it's in that buzz category. I actually think it's in a category we need to understand. So this is the condensed Wikipedia version of monetization that Terry and I are going to explore a little bit today. Monetization is a term used to describe various processes. Data monetization refers to a spectrum of ways information assets can be converted into economic value. And then there's two categories. Internal data monetization is an organization's data is used internally, resulting in economic benefit. This is commonly the case in organizations using analytics to uncover insights. Currently the most common form of monetization. And then, one I think we'll spend a little time on this, Terry, I would like to, is external data monetization. So a person or organization makes data that they possess available on a for-fee basis to external parties. This type of monetization is less common and requires various methods to distribute the data to potential buyers and consumers. So these are the two types of data monetizations that I think we can familiarize ourselves with. So let's do some back and forth here a little bit, Terry. And what we're going to do is we're kind of going to move through these categories on past, present, and future a little bit. So my question, you know, to kick off to you is, let's just dive into it. In terms of internal monetization, Terry, you run a farm, you run a consulting business, you've been collecting data for 15 or more years in a digital form. Can you give some examples of how you've internally monetized data and turned that into economic value? Be specific if you can.
For sure, for sure. So I think, you know, there's lots of different ways to look at this on the farm, and probably the simplest way that most people would relate to is even something as simple as your accounting, which everybody loves, and doing financials, looking at different benchmarks, maybe your working capital, those kind of things. So that's one kind of easy, simple way to relate it. I think getting more into the world that I think about as an agronomist and a precision ag guy is just, you know, looking at various different forms of data. And I guess some of the things that talked about in my presentation is just, you know, having the ability to track and measure. And one thing that's been a really cool example for us and really simple is creating that profit map. And we had a bit of a discussion. But that, so profit map is very similar to a yield map, but it's actually taking the cost of that, the revenue of that acre, yield times price minus all the costs associated with it. So you got your variable costs, you know, according to that zone or that field, and then all your fixed costs on top of that. And the difference is when you have a yield map that shows a low yield, well, just that's low yield. It's okay, it would be nice if it was higher, but you'd really don't know what that means. But when you can turn it into a profit map and all of a sudden you see, hey, there's areas of the field that I'm losing money, it starts to make you think. And I had this conversation with a girl that interviewed me after the presentation, and I thought about this a bit more. I mean, many of us go to work to earn money, right? And how many of us would be willing to pay to go to work? Probably wouldn't be very fun, and we wouldn't be able to feed our families for very long. And the reality is, as farmers, there is acres and there is portions of the work that we do that's actually losing us money. And if we can use data to tell us that, most of us don't know that and don't know where those areas are. So that's one specific example there.
Yeah, and you showed that map of a field yesterday. I remember working on that field where you took a piece out of production and see it to hay. Terry, I heard Evan earlier talk about cost of production. I'm going to put you on the spot, and then you can give me a couple zingers. But what's your cost of production per bushel of canola? the last 2 years.
Yeah, you got me there. I should have been expecting that. So our cost of production on canola probably has, and it depends per year, per field. So I actually don't look at the average that often. But yeah, I'm trying to do the mental math now here really quickly. It's really good.
So you mean
it's
you really know good. Cost of production per field, Terry?
I do. I have the ability to look at those reports, but I don't look at them as much as I should. But yeah, so to give you the actual number right off the top of my head, I couldn't do that. So you caught me there. I'm sorry, guys.
You can pick another crop if you want. So I might get a drink ticket there.
Yeah,
myself,
this so. Is looks like it's going to turn into a bait here soon.
Okay, it's your turn. It's your turn, buddy. What do you got for me? So. You want to ask me a question around this category?
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, farm management software is a really interesting thing. I think it's really important. We're all going to have a base platform. And I just got back from Agritechnica, and one of the things that I think is a bit exhausting for growers in the industry right now is, I mean, there was literally 100 data platforms there in various different ways, shapes, and sizes, and they're all promising, you know, that they're better than anybody else. And those kind of things. So we've invested quite deeply over the years into, you know, the platform Trimble Ag Business software, and we're using it really in really valuable ways in a lot of areas of our business, but it took us time to get there. But I think this is a huge challenge for growers, and this is one of the tools that you need to do to collect that data to start having these insights and creating value. But where do you see this space going, and where does, you know, from your own viewpoint, and also as, you know, say, Xarvio, like, how do they look at this?
It's a good question we faced a lot. I would suggest that there's a little bit of an industry mindset shift around this category of software, when there was, I believe at one time, and some maybe still believe that there will be a dominant platform in play. So, or let's just say like three dominant platforms, kind of like operating systems, right? You get to like three. So a Windows and a iOS and an Android kind of platform. But I believe that it's too complex in agriculture and food to get it down to three. There will be a lot of blood on the highway on the way down from where we're at now. If you look at the market maps, there's spatters of farm management software. But it will be a completely interconnected web of tools, I believe, that people will learn to focus on which tools provide the most value, and that will connect kind of in a hub and spoke kind of way. The hub isn't necessarily the platform, it's just more the intermediate between. So I think the fault, you know, for Xarvio, I get to challenge our strategy, and I get to challenge the fact that, you know, should we enter into the farm management platform space and compete against Trimble or Climate or Deere? And my advice back to our core team has always been, you know, we have extreme expertise in crop protection, modeling, and analytics, and I believe we need to stay focused there as a company and play nice with companies like Corteva and Climate and Trimble and Deere. And so that's my own personal view, and I believe influencing some of those Xarvio strategies. So yeah, there's going to be, unfortunately, there's going to be as many farm management softwares in the future as you're probably experiencing today, but expect that hub to be a lot more efficient for you as a farmer.
I think one of the things that, you know, I've seen since the start of my career in this area, and probably one of the things that I maybe actually somewhat predicted a little bit correctly, was, you know, early on everyone was going for that holy grail, like, we're going to be the one place that you do everything. And the reality is this world is just way too complex. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I spoke at an Ag Data conference in Champaign, Illinois, before the Farm Progress Show. And one of the things I said that, you know, I wanted to be able to run the farm from my phone. That was my goal. And that I believe that, you know, there'll be certain kind of evolve to kind of operating systems, somewhat like your phone, whether it's iOS or Android. And companies are going to have to become more open. And everyone's going to have a different set of apps that they use for their specific farm that plug in. And so we're starting to see that now. We're starting to see platforms even just recently announced at Agritechnica as well, or just before that was the Farm 365 or whatever it is. So Claus and Deere are actually talking to each other and other companies to share data. And there's a lot of IPOs and stuff like that that are APIs, I guess I'm getting that mixed up. But there's just a lot more, starting to see that more connectivity and things talk back and forth. So I think we got a long ways to go, but we're starting to see the path there.
So let's go maybe another little bit on this. My phone's buzzing too, so that means there's questions coming in, and that's great. Let's go one more depth on farm management software. So there's farms that have been collecting data through their equipment or through their agronomist for 10, 15 years. And the argument is that there's a lot of value in that data, and then we're going to get to ownership, but not right now. But let's talk about the value of data. And I kind of want to go here now. So Terry, would you ever consider selling your data in your farm management software, Trimble Ag? You told everybody you're managing it, and you've got 15 years of data. If there's enough value there, you gave us examples how you're monetizing it internally. Externally, would you ever sell it?
Yeah, I've thought about it. No one's offered it to me yet. I'm going to turn the question to the crowd a little bit first. For the farmers in the room, how many are doing precision farming or getting different layers of data, paying for data on their farm, whether it's soil tests, any other analytics, buying imagery, any kind of thing? Is anybody doing that on their farms? Okay, awesome. Has anybody thought about what they've spent on that over the years?
Does anybody want to join the conversation? I got a mic here.
Does anybody know what the number is for their farm?
What have you spent on that?
Probably $10,000.
$10,000. You got $10,000 back here.
Okay, so. All right, it's going to start a bidding war. I'll give you $100.
Who spent more than 10? 100? You're making this guy feel inadequate.
100,000. Okay.
He's a lightweight.
This is awesome. So I started putting together a bit of some kind of a sales presentation, so to speak, to some companies that we could potentially work with and leverage all the data. And I started thinking about, we're 15,000 acres now, but we're 10,000 for a while. And I started thinking about all the soil tests, all the tissue tests, all the imagery, all the Veris work, all the blah, 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 all the layers of data, and just what we had spent over the years. And it sounds like a crazy number, but it doesn't take that long to add up when you think, you know, a few dollars an acre every year. It worked out to over $500,000 of just the cost of acquisition. So when you think about selling the farm data, I mean, I would need $500,000 just to get back the cost of acquisition. And
is that a lifetime rough calculation?
Yeah, basically, you know, since we started the agronomy business 12 years ago, because we weren't soil testing before that, and those kind of things. And then I started thinking about, well, really that data, and this is a part of the issue with big data, is that it's really useless and meaningless when it's just there in a pile somewhere. But when you can attach it to accurate crop records, accurate yields, weather, the whole system, which we actually have, that's got to be worth exponentially more. And I think this is the carrot that, you know, everyone's chasing, that maybe we don't always think about, but it really got me thinking about this subject.
Well, it's an interesting way to approach it. I wasn't thinking you would approach it that way, but you've analyzed your cost of goods roughly on an annual basis to just simply collect data at $50,000. It's easy math. At 10,000 acres is $5 an acre on your cost. So for you to externally monetize that to whether it's a company or whether it's a group, you would obviously want to see some kind of return. The question I have is, are we being too protective of this information and this data because maybe it could be used today as opposed to us kind of hoarding and sitting on it? And maybe we should be a little more open source in our thinking and just give it away.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't really know. No one's asked for the data. Besides, you know, the guys that want to collect it automatically or different platforms when you put your data in there, there's obviously value to them. But then I was going somewhere else with that.
I do have a question for you guys. To what degree do you think that the modern tools that we're all just using basically ubiquitously, like our cell phone would be example, or many of the widgets that come in the tractors, to what degree are they being subsidized by these companies wanting our data? So what I'm saying is, I mean, Google's free. But we know that they're getting something in exchange, like 5,000 points of data about every human being on planet Earth every time they go on there.
I'll take that one. I saw a really good presentation last week from Joel Whipperforth at Winfield on this exact topic. And he broke it down to companies in the data management area need to do three things. Number one is have transparency. So there was a question on my phone here. I'm a Zarvio employee. Are we part of the Open Ag Data Alliance? Today we're not, but Joel actually has made some introductions, so we're going to explore that. But transparency. The second was, it's actually a word that I kind of like monetization had to look up, but reciprocity. So is there something that you're getting back in return from exchanging that data? When on Google, and he showed his phone how these apps were using pictures, these apps were using his location, and he's allowing that to occur because he's getting something back in return. And I think in ag, that's actually more common. I think there's a lot of reciprocal value that we get from exchanging yield data into the John Deere platform and back, because there's value on picking up on things. And the last was accountability. And I think from an accountability standpoint, it's accountability in terms of security, and safety of data, and I don't think we should. I don't know any farms that have a chief data officer yet, or complex IT redundant backup servers. I know a lot that have lots of good USB drives and drawers. So we actually need to hold the data platforms accountable for the safety and security and storage of our data. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll maybe just comment on that quickly, because it's a pretty deep subject, but I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot more about all this stuff, and especially when you think about like Facebook and Google, and just thinking about the effect that has on our lives, and especially younger people. They're not on Facebook because it's not cool anymore, but you know, I think we might look back and reconsider, was it right to make those things free? Because then in order for those companies to be able to move forward, they use advertising. And the reality is, you know, I don't want to get too conspiracy theory here, but it's kind of like a huge human experiment going on. And, you know, we didn't really even have cell phones or mobile devices 10 years ago. So this has been an extremely short amount of time, and we look at how much that influences our lives today. It's incredible. For most people today, probably the first thing they look at when they wake up and the last thing that they look at before they go to bed is their phones. And these companies know you better than you know, and know better when you might decide, you know, to buy something. And it's listening to you in various different ways. And when you're riding home on the train from Agritechnica, and you're like, oh man, it'd be so nice to, you know, sit in the hot tub, and we got back to the hotel, but it doesn't have a hot tub. And the first ad you see on Instagram when you open it up is about hot tubs. It's not a coincidence.
We hope that you are enjoying this episode of the Growing the Future podcast. Please take the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm. And now, back to the show.
Last night I did a Facebook Live for the first time in my life, and it asked me to allow Facebook to access my audio. And I did, because I wanted to get this live on our concert last night, but I haven't turned it off yet. So, hi Facebook. And which owns Instagram, by the way. Okay, we got some actually good questions on the phone, so you guys are more comfortable that way. That's fine, that's good.
You can't get a free beer ticket if you text it on the phone.
So yield monitor data collection, yield monitor techniques is probably 25 years old and let's say arguably outdated. However, we base a lot of our precision decisions on this technique, on this report card. Terry, where do you see this going in the future?
I don't know. I mean, the yield data, monitor data is so frustrating to me that we live in the day and age of a technology that we do, and it still sucks. It still sucks. That being said, enough aggregated data. I saw a really interesting presentation by FBN a couple months ago, and you know, my initial thoughts of what they were doing with putting all this data in is like, it's junk data, it's just no good. But they showed the scientific data examples of how when you get enough aggregated data, you actually come to a very accurate outcome, and it kind of changed my thinking. So I am very, very frustrated with that I can't believe we don't have better tools or technology in that aspect. But I still think there's value there. I still think it's a relative scale. I don't worry. We recalibrate our yield maps to the grain cart scale, which is, you know, what we want to do. But I'm really looking for the variance across the field. If it's 5 bushels out on the total, like, that's not what I'm making the decision on. I'm looking at what are the variances and how can I manage that or you know, leverage that for my own opportunity.
Yeah. And you've got a mixed fleet now of harvesters. You've got Deere and a Claus, I believe. And you've managed without any yield gaps this year?
Well, we're not done it yet. You know, this is one of the Achilles heels, too, is it does take time to manage the data and manage it properly. And as much value as there, sometimes other things become priority. But, you know, one of the cool things that you couldn't have done a long time ago is, and I might get in trouble for this, but I don't think so anymore, but our Claus combine data is going to my John Deere. It's got a John Deere monitor in it. It's got an Ag Bridge connection, and so I think that's kind of cool. And so some of those things are interesting.
Yeah.
What's interesting in my John Deere is if you want to compare fuel use between all the combines, it's extremely hard to do that. You can't just click a report, and maybe you can now, so I apologize if that's changed. But it's interesting when you go to look to pull some of that data out of something that a grower might want to compare to make a decision about something. Some of those reports that I would first think about aren't actually easily accessible.
Yeah. And Ryan, this is similar to, I think, question you want to ask, unless it's been asked. And you need a beer ticket too, because you're getting thirsty. So, yes, please ask the question.
The first question or the second one?
Whatever you want. Firing range.
My second question was, when you talk about producers owning their own data, which I agree, do you feel they own the outcome of the analysis of the data that may have been done by a platform, such as yield data and input costs that were used to generate a profit map? Does the producer own the profit map, or who owns the outcome?
Yeah, these are good questions. So I'll give my personal view on this. I believe that this is kind of in that category of those three categories of transparency and reciprocity and accountability. But so it's a group effort on this kind of stuff. I think we just kind of confirmed that ownership is maybe only going to become more important when there's potentially external monetization mechanisms in the future. Internal monetization efforts that Terry's given examples of, ownership doesn't really affect as much. But let's just pretend that there's a marketplace where Terry can put his data and sell it. So the question would be, I think what you're asking is that, does Terry, if he's got profit maps out of a software, does he get a royalty off that output, if I can use that example? I don't believe he would. So I don't believe that he would get all of it, is what I'm trying to say. I think of it a little bit like baking a cake with ingredients and such, and it's maybe even not different than our food that we produce today. So yes, we provide the wheat, right? But we don't get all the value out of the loaf of bread, clearly. And so I hope we get more. Today we're getting really no value for that data, Ryan, and I think that in the future we will be able to, but I don't think it'll be 100%. So by extension, my short answer is no. I don't believe the farmers own the outputs of insight from these farm data platforms.
Yeah, that's an awesome question, and it really made me think when you asked that. So I think You know, I think that's something that we need to think about as growers, and when we're working with platforms and outcomes, it's probably a discussion that needs to be had, and I think about it as an exchange of value. So there's probably certain cases where I would consider that I would own that, depending on the situation. But it's not much different than what Warren just talked about wanting to use Facebook Live. So was he willing to allow access to his microphone in order to get something in return, right? And so I think this is what we're really talking about. And so some cases, I may be willing for that outcome to be owned by the platform or however it gets created, but I would just want to understand that. And I think the question that we have to ask in these scenarios and exchanges is, do we understand? We might understand what we're getting, but do we understand what we're giving away in exchange to get that? And I think that's the question that we need to be thinking about.
Good. A comment came in just around this as well, in terms of there's really no incentive for data capture today. I disagree. So thanks for the text, I disagree. We have sat through a day, and if not a couple days, of examples of internal data monetization examples where the incentive is your capability to turn that into profit and value on your farm. So, but what I do agree is there's no external incentive or external body that supports Terry spending more time and more effort punching data in. But I believe there will be, and the example that I think will come soonest for you, Terry, is I believe that the pulse industry is about to rapidly change, and you're a part of that, and I believe that they're going to want pulse ingredients that have a proven track record of certain management practices. And so I believe your data will be valuable, and the granola bar made of this plant-based protein, I think you'll have a capability to actually get a premium for it. So,
for sure. I mean, that I do agree with. I mean, that was one of the main purposes for us to start branding our farm and recording all of our farm data. There's always talk about transparency and all those things and field to fork and that kind of stuff. But most of that stuff actually doesn't follow all the way through the chain. And at one time, I was very interested about getting involved in the microbrewing industry, and mainly because we could right now create a QR code on that bottle of beer that would track everything that ever happened to that barley and where it came from and what was done and what time and all those things. And there's really very few, you know, systems that can do that. So I think there is value there, and we haven't got paid for it yet. There's some scenarios where growers are getting paid for that in different systems, but I think that's going to be coming, and I want to be ready for it to be, you know, at the leading edge or the early adopters of taking advantage of that value, because like anything in any industry, the risk and the most opportunity also is in those early stages before it gets commoditized.
I just had a great friendly reminder from a friend. I'm from Alberta. Any Alberta farmers here or Alberta? Yeah, there's a few. Have you participated in the carbon credit business on your farm? Yeah. So you're externally monetizing your farm data. That's a great example of something that's already happening. Carbon credits is nothing but a data product, right? So thanks, Kevin, for that reminder.
And I hear that's coming to Saskatchewan, like I've heard for the last 10 years, but supposedly it's here this time. So we'll see. I don't know.
I hope so.
I think that session is going on right now, so please don't leave. But anyways,
I don't know. I think Bill just ran out of the room again. So, good. What else? What other topics do we got? Benchmarking. So we haven't covered benchmarking. Do you do any benchmarking in your business or on your farm today?
Yeah, we do. We're doing more and more benchmarking. This is kind of interesting. We're in a peer group and we discuss these kind of things a lot. And sometimes people look at benchmarking like, oh, well, it's not valuable because, you know, this isn't the same or that isn't the same. But there's all kinds of relative things to glean, and even things like now we're, you know, we track all the hours that our team is working on. Now we're starting to track like how many hours we spend seeding, harvesting, fixing things in the shop, whatever it may be. And I mean, you don't if you're going to be running in a 100-meter race, you just don't show up to the Olympics and see who crosses the finish line first, right? You need to know how fast your time is and what you need to improve in order to get there, right? And so this is what I look at benchmarking simply. It's just a measurement of...
What's an example of a benchmark from another farm that you picked up on and then calculated yourself and improved upon? Can you think of an example?
Yeah, so this is, it's not necessarily from a farm, but probably one of the most common financial benchmarks that we look at and really focus on in our farm is labor, power, and machinery. So that's your machinery costs, your repairs, your fuel, and your labor, right? And this is something that is becoming a huger issue for a lot of farms as equipment costs escalate. And so however you do it, whether it's old equipment and lots of people or new equipment and not very many people, or however you slice and dice that pie, there's all kinds of arguments about the right way to do it. At the end of the day, is what does it cost you per acre to get that done, and how do you compare? So we're in a benchmarking group with M&P and also with in our peer group, so we can compare what our number is. And if you talk to like somebody like the GARS guys, there's some dramatic differences in the exact same type of cropping areas that can vary $100 an acre. So, you know, easily. So on a 10,000 acre farm, that's, you know, $100,000 a year or more every year, you know, that you may be better or worse than the next guy. And that's kind of important.
And I know you're not a numbers guy because you failed the first question, so I won't ask you.
Your... Yeah, that's why I got other people that do that. That's my story.
You delegated, so yeah. Good. Let's, I think let's move topics to this one. We've got about 10 minutes left in discussion. I had a question come in on my phone just actually around Zarvio, what we do, and we're going to bring our offer to Western Canada. So just not to be meant as a plug, but in the pitch party, Brent will be pitching a lot of the Zarvio stuff, so get a bit of an intro there. We don't have a booth here or anything. And then there's drink tickets on us tonight as well, so you'll learn more about Zarvio that way. But this category is a place that we've excelled in. I'll tell you a story. So the story is we wanted to come up with a scouting app. And this is what the team told me. And I've seen a lot of scouting apps, and they said, we're going to build a scouting app. I'm like, oh, great, here's another scouting app. I said, no, we're going to build a scouting app that automates the scouting. I'm like, okay, I like that word. Tell me more. So we're going to take a picture of a plant, and we're going to tell you what it is with the picture. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And so I'm an internal skeptic, but they convinced us that we would do this. We launched it in 2016. It came out as Weed Scout. It got a lot of downloads from the other people that were looking for Weed Scout. But we had a few farmers that downloaded it as well. Unintentional audience there. And it kind of didn't work great. So you can imagine in a company like Bayer, that's not used to launching things half-assed that don't work, what that, you know, felt like. But I was okay with it. I'm pretty used to failing, and I can handle it. I can move on. And so then you fast forward to today. We have a Zarvio scouting app freely available in over 70 countries in the world. We just surpassed 2 million total downloads. And last season, I'm probably giving away numbers I shouldn't, but whatever. Last season, we had 100,000 pictures of weeds collected in Canada through our Zarvio scouting app. So what it does, it uses AI. AI is just basically an extension of a machine learning algorithm that takes identification parameters of a leaf and the shadow and the shape and tells you what it is. So I'm bullish on this space. I can get past the buzz of the AI, ML kind of stuff because I'm seeing examples. I want you guys to experience that as well and use these apps to your advantage to augment, not replace your decisions. So I think my story here is if you're following the sense and spray space, and maybe Terry, you could comment on your experience at Agritechnica in the sense and spray. But you know, Zarvio is one of a few companies that are working on sense and spray technology, which is essentially detection, identification, and action right through the boom, and doing that on the go. So I'm bullish. There was another presenter that said this space was coming hard and heavy, and we better buckle up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's so many applications that we don't even really realize or understand that is already using AI, and I guess the Facebook and the advertising examples is a huge example of that in the everyday world. But so in Agritechnica there, again, there was a lot of companies working in that specific space, and I think there's a lot of attention being put on reduction of chemicals, but I kind of think once in a while I think about skipping the technology, like Ethiopia, they never had landlines, they went straight to cell phones, and you can get great cell phone data anywhere in Ethiopia. It's crazy. But so why are we focusing on knowing where to spray? Why don't we use the same technology to know where to go pluck it or shoot it with a laser or whatever and skip the whole chemical thing to begin with? Maybe that's not a great strategy for a chemical company to develop, but
we're doing it.
Yeah. So those are just some of the things that I see. And the other thing that we're going to need this for is, and I think this is kind of the stumbling block for a lot of growers, is there's so much data, they don't know what to do with it, they don't know where to start. And I used to be kind of against this idea of using algorithms and you got to have knowledge, you got to have human input and all those things. But at the same hand, I'm realizing that there's huge opportunities for us to learn and leverage that we possibly can't compute, because as this comes faster and more prevalent, I realize that my very small processor still running on like half a bit of RAM or whatever it is just not going to be able to keep up with the potential of the data that we can create and what we can do with it.
Terry, if you had Sense and Spray on your farm today, what would be the first pass that you would save the most money on? So you're over your fields three or four times. What would be the one you'd save the most on?
I think it would be, pre-seed burn-off for sure. It would probably be the first very simple one.
Yeah. I think there's examples out there showing 80% reduction in that specific pass. The second one I've seen is post-harvest. Anybody that's doing post-harvest, they'd probably see the same. So huge opportunity. Question in the back.
Yeah, Warren, thanks very much. Question around artificial intelligence for you. So which way did Sarvio choose to go? Kind of like towards down the route of the neural networks or more the rule-based approach? Because I can assume you guys, when you got pictures, there was a lot of pictures that weren't really supposed to be in there, people taking pictures of bottles.
Yeah.
Right? And so was there like a lot of manual process involved, and how much data would you say you need to collect to actually come to a point where you
I understand the question, I think. So thanks for that. I can't get too geeky on this because I really don't know the difference between neural networks and rule-based. But all I can tell you is what I was told is our development process. So it's been communicated to me that we need about 500 pictures of a certain plant species at that specific growth stage to allow the machine to begin to take over control of the output decision. So in the early days of training an algorithm, we had manual assignment of those species by experts in an office. We also had Brent, I think I saw him in the back, we've paid university institutions and research institutions to go take pictures of weeds at multiple stages throughout the year. We paid them to take pictures. And then they label them and they put them in. So it is actually, it's pretty manual once you get to that 500 picture threshold. After then, that you can start to trust the machine and you shouldn't be as concerned that the picture of the green postcard is gonna throw out the algorithm. But what's crazy about identification of plant species is plants are dynamic throughout the season on these different two-leaf, three-leaf. But I actually would say that machines will do better than we will at different stages. I have a love-hate relationship with our scouting app because lots of times it tells me that the buckwheat is something else and I hate it. But the story I have is at Egg in Motion, we had a volunteer canola and volunteer mustard. And I don't know if you guys know at the small seedling stage how different they look. They don't really look that different. But the scouting app somehow saw a difference and picked it up accurately. So anyway, we got to learn to trust. It's a bit of trust thing. So.
Yeah, so I think we're almost out of time. I think we got one more zinger question from Ryan.
So as the equipment guy in the room, and we've been talking about precision ag and everything through this whole event, but you've triggered something on a little bit, is if we, could we start to work on equipment purchases based on data? What I mean is, Terry, what's your cost of operating your combine per acre on the farm?
You absolutely know that answer.
I know that answer. But
absolutely, yes. So, I mean, I don't want to, like, Warren kind of made me feel silly a little bit earlier, which, and I was working on getting him back, but we ran out of time. But, yeah, no, we do look at all these numbers, and this is something that we're doing more and more, at looking at what does it actually cost us to run that sprayer over an acre, and what's our efficiencies and downtimes, and looking at, you know, using mixed tanks so you're cut your fill times from 15 minutes to 7 and all these kind of things. So we need to be paying a lot better attention to that, especially with the cost of equipment nowadays. And it kind of leads into another thing. I think this is kind of one of the reasons why, you know, Deere would have interest in having the telematics and collecting the skid data, because they can better understand. If you understand what the value is that you have, then you know and understand the margin that you can sell, what that's worth to the grower. And this brings up to the question that I wanted to challenge Warren with, and I'm not gonna let him respond because we're not gonna have any time. But my challenge was gonna be, you know, one of the things that we've done very well by leveraging data is finding those opportunities where we can reduce our risk and get something more, whether it's reduce seeding rates in canola down to 2.5 pounds or whatever it is with the right technology, or learning how to leverage your equipment over more acres and become more efficient with it. And we're starting to hear more and more about outcome-based pricing models of a weed, a fungicide, or disease-free field or whatever. And we're seeing this with the canola seed. Now it's going to be sold by the seed size. And some people might get excited about that, but for me initially, it kind of feels like going back to the wheat board days. And you know, it doesn't feel to me like it's helping me if I'm, you know, managing at a higher level. I'm not yet convinced. That's where the opportunities lied for people that want to leverage their data before somebody else figures it out. So I'm not yet convinced that that's good for me. I'm not saying that it's not, but I'm just not convinced that that's good for me yet.
I know we don't have time, but
go ahead.
To be continued, I think that's a great topic, Terry, for another duel on the tailgate talk. So thanks, Dan.
Thanks very much. I give a big round of applause to these guys for just going up there and winging it. Beautiful talk. Hopefully that had value.
Thanks for listening to the Growing the Future podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for highlights of the show. Also, full-length videos of the show are available on our website, www.growingthefuturepodcast.ca, and on YouTube. We would very much appreciate if you took the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm.